Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I am Trevor Sikkema here with Benjamin Solak. We are running through every single division in the NFL, going down every single team, looking at their draft classes from the 2019 draft class. This week, we're on the NFC conference. Last week, we did the AFC. So if you're an AFC team fan, you can go back and listen to any of those podcasts that you want. I'm non-biased opinion, I'd say that the podcast is absolutely phenomenal, and it's the best recap of your team's draft class that you're going to find anywhere on this fine website. So that brings us to the NFC. And yesterday we looked at the NFC East. Had to get the NFC East out of the way right at the beginning because Ben's an Eagles fan and he would have just been chomping at the bit just like he was during the I felt like the guest mock draft, but Ben, we were just like leading up to the Eagles basically the whole time, and you were just like, when did we get to the Eagles pick? This is the main act.
I mean, it's I know that you don't much have this experience because you were picking top five.
Sick.
But waiting for the lead up.
Yeah.
For the pick, you just keep on thinking about the players who are going to be there. Yeah, sure. You know, it's just the way that it is.
Yeah, for sure, man. Yeah, thanks. It was good.
No problem.
But I mean, it's funny because the Bucks, the guy that everybody thought was going to go to the Bucks, like in January, ended up going to the Bucks anyways. So whatever. Enough of the who picked where, because, you know, it doesn't really matter because neither of our teams won the title. I don't care about what happened the year before. Don't bring it up. We're moving to the NFC North this
week. The Eagles won the Super Bowl in 2017. What?
So we have the Green Bay Packers, Chicago Bears, Minnesota Vikings, and Detroit Lions today. We're doing the NFC North. Let's start with the Bears, Ben. Mainly because they have the least amount of picks and we can get them out of the way. No, I'm just kidding. But their first round pick, well, I'm kind of not kidding. Their first round pick is like the left half of Khalil Mack. Is that right? Like what we're doing? We're getting like left half Khalil Mack this year.
The top half. Torso, arms, head, and neck.
Oh, okay. Like, so upper body.
Very angry. Yeah, top half that can't really move. But it's
so with their first pick in this draft, they picked upper body Khalil Mack, which is a great – I mean, you're getting great value out of this pick, I think, for how late they picked they picked the upper body of Khalil Mack later in the draft. But in the
as long as you have someone to pick him up and carry him around, it's a good scheme fit, yeah.
If, can you make, like, the lower part of his body, like, cyborg? Like, you know?
Right, exactly. Then, just give him robot legs.
Yeah, right? I mean, like,
listen,
you know, like
the
Iron Man.
The robots are taking over anyway.
Like Iron Man, rip. All right, there was a spoiler. Sorry.
Wow.
round three is when they actually started the draft. They picked David Montgomery, running back out of Iowa State. We'll just start here, I guess. Ben, where were you on David Montgomery? Did you like him? I think I had him as RB5. There are things that I really like about Montgomery, but also areas where I think that he's super limited. But in an offense like Chicago, I kind of like it because he's going to be this complimentary back, right? I mean, they already have Tariq Cohen on the team. There's that 1-2 punch there. I know they got rid of Jordan Howard, so that kind of paves the way for David Montgomery to get some playing time early. And this is a guy who... he wins with toughness. He wins by, you know, making guys miss, getting yards after contact, all that kinds of stuff. And I think that's a really good compliment, especially to an offense that Nagy has up there in Chicago, where they're looking to spread the ball out. They're looking to go to all kinds of different options. David Montgomery's not going to have too much on his plate. And he was a guy who had a ton of carries in college. And I thought, man, if you're going to give this guy the same kind of like carry load emphasis feature back thing, I just don't think he is like all-worldly, like, athletic enough to make it happen and be successful every time you could hand this guy off the ball. But in the role that I think he's going to have in Chicago, I think it's a good pick. What do you think?
Yeah, so it's funny because I think that sometimes David Montgomery's running style, his play style, he thinks he's Tariq Cohen, given how he kind of, like, you know, shakes and bakes in the open field. Tariq Cohen. And that's important to know. And then so there's a danger in playing like Tariq Cohen when you don't have Tariq Cohen's quickness and explosiveness. Now, what Montgomery does have is the contact balance, is the low riding frame. He's kind of, he's that rocked up, smaller sort of guy who always has natural leverage and can duck under a lot of hits. And that's what strings together Montgomery's really, really good runs. That being said, yeah, when you say, okay, what's the fit in Chicago? Well, to me, I think that you have Tariq Cohen. He's your space touch sort of a guy. You're looking for somebody who's going to take those in between the tackles touches that you lost when you traded away Jordan Howard. Obviously, Jordan Howard wasn't a super productive back for you under the Nagy administration. Obviously, Howard had his day in the sun before Nagy was there. But under Nagy, Howard wasn't necessarily super productive on a per-carry basis. And so you want to replace those in between the tackles touches. The guy who's going to run power for you and is going to run inside zone is that Montgomery's best fit?
But it should be, right? I mean, when I look at David Montgomery, certainly like his athletic profile, I think, like you said, he kind of thinks he's a finesse runner, but he really shouldn't be. Like, is that going to, is David Montgomery going to be able to flip the switch and say, hey, I'm a power guy now. Like, this is how I'm going to do. I'm going to do things in between the tackles.
Is that I think Montgomery gravitates towards space. And I think that there's two reasons for that. Number one, he fancies himself a bit of a, that Tariq Cohen running style we talked about.
I mean, in the Big 12, they can't tackle. So
yeah, like super elusive and like able to string together these big runs. And there's some truth to that and there's some non-truth to that. That's reason one. Reason two is because he progressively ran out of reasons to trust his offensive line. Like the Iowa State offensive line was not great. There were absolutely a ton of situations where Montgomery was getting contacted behind the line of scrimmage, and it wasn't his fault. It wasn't that he was screwing around. Sometimes it was, but a lot of the times it wasn't. So when you don't trust your offensive line, you're more willing to break structure quickly and just go create for yourself because you don't trust the guys who are blocking for you. So I think there's some reason to be more optimistic about his between the tackles ability. But even then, like we're talking about running on power, like basic power concepts. They ran counter a lot with Jordan Howard there.
Mm-hmm.
Does Montgomery have that vertical burst, that explosiveness to get behind a puller and then hit that hole with tempo right as it develops and slice up in the middle of the defense, be able to bust angles? I don't see that in his film. I don't see a bursty player.
I don't know. I kind of see the foot in the ground burst. I just don't see a ton after that. So like, I think that Montgomery can be a short area dude. So I think that's why maybe it's a little bit more of an optimistic approach when I look at Montgomery and what he could be in Chicago, because you're right, we're projecting him to be a little bit different of a player that he was at Iowa State, but I kind of think he can be, hoping he can be, because I see little flashes of his game where I think, okay, this guy can be a between the tackles, little complimentary back in a system like Chicago and with a guy like Tariq Cohen. But if he gets carried away and, you know, if he's got Derrick Henry syndrome where, you know, looks like Tarzan plays like Jane, kind of, we look at Derrick Henry and we think, hey, man, go up the middle, you know, do your thing in between the tackles. And a lot of times Derrick Henry always just wants to bounce to the outside. And so you get this giant hulking running back, not saying Montgomery is the same exact profile, just kind of setting up an example here. Montgomery is a guy who, when I look at him and I look at his size, I look at his build, I think, okay, this is a guy who could have a low center of gravity, good balance between contact. He's strong. He could get, you know, he could get some yards after carry. He could play in between the tackles. But I do think you're right. A lot of his success comes from the outside. And I'm hoping he realizes that, hey, this is his best role in the NFL, especially in Chicago early on, that he's got to be this complimentary dude. So let's move on to their next pick was Calvin Ridley. Were you ever super big on Calvin Ridley?
Because it was Calvin. They got Calvin.
Oh, my God. Riley, sorry. Riley Ridley.
If only they got Calvin. Can you imagine?
It says on the NFL, NFL.com tracker, it actually says Kaven Ridley.
Ah, Kaven. Smart, strong player.
So, they're messing up all over the place. Riley Ridley. Were you ever big on Riley Ridley throughout this season?
Yeah. So, I at one point, way before any of like the crazy Riley Ridley debates happened, I was like probably like October, November. I was like, you know who like really is underrated in this class is Riley Ridley. I think he's an awesome route runner. And then I, thank God, never tweeted about Riley Ridley after that. And then Riley Ridley became this massive flashpoint for analytics Twitter versus film Twitter and yada, 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 yada. Once you had poor testing for Ridley, which he tested like under average, but like not awfully. But once you had poor testing, it's like, what are you really hanging your hat on here? Like, okay, you like his film, but the production's not good and the athletic testing isn't good. So really where, like how high are you going to value this guy? Really, it's the question of like, where are you going to gamble on him? I think getting him round four is really good value for his skill set, for his ability. I do think he's a great route runner still. I think he's really strong on the back shoulder. I think he has the ability to give you some X reps because he's good getting off the line against press coverage. And so this is a guy who I think is going to return value on round four. But I also agree, like I wouldn't have been selecting him in round two with some of the other guys who were there because you have more to hang your hat on in terms of that they've filled out more of their profile. They've got good film and good production, good film and good testing, et cetera, et cetera. And so there was an unnecessary amount of work done on Riley Ridley and he's never going to be good. He's actually the best receiver in the class. And, you know, the truth's always somewhere in the middle. Ridley's a fine receiver with a good pro projection, and round four is a good spot to gamble on a guy who there are some red flags in terms of the ancillary aspects of his evaluation.
All right, we spent way too much time in Chicago, but actually that was pretty analytical. Very proud of us that we didn't just BS the whole class. So those people will actually probably appreciate that.
It's okay. We can
talk
a lot about the Packers, a lot about the Vikings, had a good draft class, and then we can laugh about the Lions.
Okay, let us start with the Packers then. Packers had two picks in the first round. They were slotted to pick 12th and also 30th. They ended up picking 12th and then at 21, trading up with Seattle when Seattle was looking to acquire all those picks, which, hold up, we're going to get to Seattle, but, like, didn't Seattle have, like, 11 picks or something? Like, 10? Like, a crap ton of picks, and they started with 4?
My Seattle Seahawks started with 4 picks and ended with 11, yes.
That is some wizardry. Top of the Packers draft, we have Rashawn Gary. I really had no idea where Rashawn Gary was going to go in this draft.
This shocked me.
At the beginning of the year, it was Rashawn Gary, this former 5-star number 1 overall recruit, didn't really have the production in the NFL, but there was, you know, you read those way too early mock drafts, and it's kind of based off projection and talent, so you go, okay, this kid was a 5-star, this kid's going to go top 5, top 10. As the season went on, the production continued to not be there. He wanted to be an edge, he was an edge guy. There's doubts about kind of his flexibility and how fast he can be around the edge, just for a guy that's his size. I mean, he's an incredible athlete for a 280-pound man. But you just wonder kind of where his best spot is in the NFL. So then you're like, oh, is this dude a tweener? What's going on? Is that why he doesn't have the production that he should be having for his talent level? There was talk of him going late first round. There was talk of him going second round. He ends up going 12th overall. I thought that that was pretty shocking when it went down. Yeah. I'm curious to see, where did you think, if I would have come to you right before the draft and said, you give me a pick range within 3 picks, where you think Rashawn Gary is going to get selected, and if you get it right, you win $10,000 bet.
Whoa.
Where would you have said he's going? You get like a 3-pick range. Where would you have said he was going?
15 through 17.
Okay. All right. I would have said somewhere on there. I probably would have said, 19 through 21 or something.
I thought 17 for the Giants was a great spot for him if he was there, in terms of a team that was going to like him and like what he brings. I tweeted this out a couple of days ago, which, 5-6 days after the draft was finished, a whole week after the round one was finished. The more I think about it, the more this Rashawn Gary pick to 12 just totally shocks me. I don't get it at all. Imagine having Mike Daniels spending good free agent money on Za'Darius Smith, having 3 picks in the top 45, and spending one of them on Rashawn Gary, who, A, is not ready, B, you already have multiple players who fill his mold, and C, you have significant gaps at other spots. And also, I didn't hear anything about, Packers might be interested in Rashawn Gary at 12 overall. Nothing. In terms of the team's interest in this player. So, when I look at the first round, and I can talk myself into a lot of selections and be like, oh, I see that. That makes sense. Rashawn Gary to me just sticks out as yo, what? Why?
It's, you know,
I don't get it. What's Rashawn Gary giving the Packers in year one? Which I acknowledge it's not just year one that matters when you draft, but this team has an aging quarterback who's been struggling the past couple of years, and if they want to win another Super Bowl,
they weren't going to draft a quarterback at 12.
I'm not implying they should draft one. I'm saying, to me, when I look at the team with Rodgers right now, I'm in win now mode. I don't know how long I'm going to have a Super Bowl caliber quarterback in Rodgers. How many more years I'm going to have that level of play? I want to win now.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I mean, the edge players that they could have gotten instead of Rashawn Gary. I mean, you don't have to go far to see Brian Burns' name. And then you get Montez Sweat. Oh, man. I mean, I would have rather, if I'm the Packers, I would have rather had both of those guys than Rashawn Gary. So, not a great pick for me. I don't know.
It's funny to think about, if we widen the scope here a little bit, how many Packers fans, and I did a couple Packers pods before the draft, were so jazzed about 3 picks in the top 45, and they walk away with Rashawn Gary, Darnell Savage, and Elgton Jenkins.
Hey, it's man. not
It's not bad.
Hey, man, I like Elgton Jenkins.
Kinda. I like Elgton, too. That's the best pick of those three to me in terms of value. And I like Darnell Savage as a player as well.
Yeah.
But, man.
No, I know what you're saying. Should they – let's go, let's move on to Chavis. Savage picked 21st. Should they have traded up for him? I mean, I thought you could – they could have got – I mean, when did Nasir Adderley go? When did Nasir go?
Nasir went way after. Nasir went, like, at 40-something.
Nasir went 60. How did we what? Nasir Adderley went 60?
Yeah.
Marquise Blair went 47?
The first three safeties off the board were Darnell Savage, Jonathan Abram, and Marquise Blair. Those are the first two safeties off the board.
Doing?
Picking what? Players, baby. Just Johnson down here.
Johnson went. Hold on. Got to find it. Wait for it.
Like 105, I think it was.
Wait for it.
115?
Wait. 105. Wait, where is he? Where'd he go?
105, Saints. God. Sheriff, it's 105.
How did we get here? Whatever. Okay, so, listen, yeah, look.
Every year, safety is the most difficult position to project. Every single year. We think we know who the NFL likes, and we never, ever, 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 ever do.
Oh, man. Maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. I like Darnell Savage as a player, you know? Like, I really do. I think he's good. I think he's got a lot of upside. Certainly an athletic dude. Likes to be a hitter. Can play on the back end some. You got to teach him some stuff. He's got to play the game. He's got to get some snaps under his belt, some games under his belt, and really get those instincts down. But I like his potential. But you're trading up from 30 to 21. Like, why? Why? A safety had not been picked yet. And I guess that's why you do it. If you really have Darnell Savage like that much higher on your board as a safety than everybody else, go your guy. Because I certainly think we had pegged safety to the Packers for a long time, mainly at that number 30 pick once we realized that neither the Iowa tight end boys were going to make it down there. But, man, it's just we talk about navigating the draft all the time. And it's this constant battle between, hey, go get your guys, go get the football players that you think are good that are going to help your team. And then there's also like, hey, you really didn't have to do this. And especially from a guy who had Chauncey Gardner-Johnson and Nasir Adderley rated higher than Darnell Savage. It's tough pill to swallow for me. I think he'll be fine for the Packers. I think he'll be good in the long run. But, you know,
yeah, I think the fit is good.
You got to navigate the draft the correct way. And I don't think that they did.
Right. And so – when I look, like, again, like, talking about impact players.
Who's taking Savage? Can we go between 21 and 30? Who would have taken Savage?
I mean, my prediction was that Savage was going to be the first safety off the board. I thought Seattle at 21 was going to be a spot for him, though. Obviously, you kind of expect Seattle to move back, and they do. He would have been interesting to the Eagles at 25. I know the Eagles had interest in him. Yeah, I know the Eagles had interest in him, and the Eagles need some safety help, even though they widely ignored the position there in the draft. Different conversation. Chargers would have done it. 28.
Savage over Tillery, though?
Well, I mean, if they liked Nasir at 60, then they're willing to spend high on a safety.
Well, sure, but, like, do you think the Eagles would have taken Savage over Andre Dillard? Let's just say it. Okay. Do you think that they would have taken him over Marquise Brown?
No.
Do you think they would have taken him over Josh Jacobs?
Yes.
Okay. So now we've got our
But this part. This is all just like, do we think so yet? You know what I mean? What it goes
what
back
we're here to do, Ben. That's what we're here to do.
What it go okay, but going back to the Packers, which is what we're actually here to do, what it comes down to me is I look at a team who I thought coming into the draft needed to get some instant year one contributors because they should be trying to make a push as soon as possible with Aaron Rodgers in his mid-30s. To me, they got, you know, backup pass rusher who's not really pro-ready, Darnell Savage, who hopefully is going to win the starting job, but they got like at least like a starter and nickel there. And then Elgton Jenkins has to pop over to left guard or pop over to right guard, I should say, and try to beat out Billy Turner, who they brought in free agency for the right guard spot. I mean, I would have loved to have seen some more high-impact pass catchers. They obviously get Jay Sternberger in the third round, but they still have Jimmy Graham for one more year, and so Sternberger's not really going to grow into a huge role until year two.
Yeah, but I kind of like that, but, you know.
Yeah, and, like, you know, I'm fine with that. And, like, you know, there are some people who wanted them to take one of the Iowa tight ends at 12 or at 30, and I like the fact that they kind of waited on it. I preferred that. But, I mean, to me, I look at a team that I thought needed a higher impact player on the outside edge, right? So, like somebody to spell Kyler Fackrell, who I don't necessarily think is a, you know, starting caliber edge in terms of, like, what he can produce as a pass rusher.
How dare you?
Expected them to go earlier at wide receiver and be able to get, you know, you have a guy in Devontae Adams, who's your number one, but then it's a bunch of the late round guys. You have Equanimee St. Brown, you have Marquez Valdes-Scantling, you have Jamon Moore, you have Geronimo Allison, you have a lot of role-playing guys. I thought they could have used a higher up guy there. And then obviously there's the gamble now. Aaron Jones is definitively the starter because they don't go running back until the sixth with Dexter Williams. So, like, I just don't think they added a lot for the team in 2019, which, if that's your approach to, like, look to the future, it is, and that's okay, and that's fine. And obviously, we heard they're willing to trade up to Drew Locke, so clearly they're kind of thinking about the future here. But I would have expected to see more investment into year one, the 2019 NFL season with Aaron Rodgers, with Matt LaFleur, your new head coach. That's what I would have thought they would have poured more capital into.
Maybe they think that they have that. I don't know.
I mean, I think they have a good roster. I think they've got some gaps. I think offensive skill positions, I would have loved to have seen a little bit more there.
Minnesota Vikings. Garrett Bradbury at 18. I think this is a pretty well mock drafted pick. Bradbury giving them the ability to, I think he'll play center for them, but certainly giving them a little bit of flexibility if they want to put him a guard or see what they want to do with Elf Line and all that kinds of stuff. I do think they'll ultimately keep Bradbury at center just because I think his movement skills at center are so crucial to I think what Minnesota wants to do. And that's their biggest need, right? I mean, this Minnesota roster is really good. You know, they almost went to a Super Bowl a couple of years ago. There was a team that got in their way. Can't remember what team it was. but this has kind of been their biggest need for a little bit. And I think that they get a really, really good interior player because we're always scared about mock drafting interior players because you go, you know, this is the fit. I might be a good player, but how much do you really, you know, is this guy Quentin Nelson? Is this guy blah, blah, blah? For the Vikings, I think the Bradbury pick is great. I think they could have gone a couple of different directions. If they would have picked Eric McCoy, I thought it would have been a good pick, you know, that stuff. But this was the right pick for them. Do you agree at 18?
Yeah, no. And I wrote up the Vikings. It was my most recent write-up for the Draft Network. And I said there's a lot of doubles in this draft class. Like, not a lot of, like, home runs, but a lot of, like, good picks. The one potential home run is Bradbury. Like, Bradbury has the sky-high ceiling when we talk about his ability in a zone fit, and it sounds like the new offensive coordinator, Kevin Stefanski, really isn't going to change much of the system, so you're still going to see a lot of zone. You know, you get Irv Smith. He's not overwhelming. He's not a tremendous athlete, but he's super versatile. He's super measured. He's very pro-ready. He can do a lot of things really well for you.
Mm-hmm.
Alexander Mattison and the 100 is a bit of a reach. I had to make it my least favorite pick, even though
Nobody read this article.
Getting Drew Samia in round four is great value. I think getting a guy like a Chris Boyd in round seven is going to be great value. Marcus Epps in the sixth. You know, this team, if you look, they made five picks in the first five rounds, and then they made seven picks in the last two rounds, which, like, I trading back is good. Getting more dart throws is good. Maybe in the future, get them in earlier rounds and make more dart throws and better players. But seven picks in the last two rounds. How many of these guys are going to make the roster in year one? Three?
Yeah. Right. And, you know, just going back to your point, as I'm kind of like looking at this draft as a whole, I think Minnesota realized the areas that they needed to get better. And when you talked about kind of doubling it up in a lot of areas, they went into the draft and were like, we're going to get better in these areas. This is what we're going to do.
It's
now,
a huge focus on the running game, right? Like, look at the first four
picks.
A
lot, yeah. And I think that they're kind of realizing that Cousins needs some help in that running game, right? I mean, like, they've got to be a lot more consistent about controlling what they want to control, being able to move the offensive line the way that they want to open up the passing game for those awesome wide receivers that they have and hopefully kind of opening up the field a lot more. And so I think that when you look at this draft of what Minnesota needed, they really attacked their needs. Now, I that's not to say either that Like they ignored best player available either. I thought that they played their board really well. Like Bradbury, I think is a good pick. Irv Smith's a fine pick. I like Alexander Mattson. Drew Samia is a good pick. You know, getting Oliudo where they got him, you know, all the way down. Like all this kinds of stuff I really, really liked. Even Armon Watson in the sixth round, I'm great with. I think
Armon Watson in the sixth round is a great pick. Yeah, right. I love that one.
I think that the way that they went about this draft really set up well for them helping out their team, I think, right away in their areas of their biggest concern. And that, I think that was really from top to bottom. So anytime you could do that with some really good players like the Vikings had, I think that's kind of a home run way to do things. Detroit Lions. Let's end with Detroit.
Okay.
They have TJ Hawkins' name listed as Thomas Hawkinson.
Okay. Huge red flag.
Why? Just the name Thomas?
Thomas. Imagine. Hey, easy. I would never.
My initials are TJ. So, I mean, like, my name's better. Trevor is a better name than Thomas. I mean, this is just a fact, but.
I had TJ Hawkinson graded in my top 10. I would never have had a player named Thomas Hawkinson graded in my top 10. Wouldn't have been able to do it. Would have had to drop him.
What's his middle name? Is it James? I'm looking this up. TJ
Hawkinson. James Hawkinson.
If it's James, then we're on to something because James is the GOAT middle name. That's my middle name. And I just, like, James flows so well with everything as a middle name. It's the GOAT middle name. I got to find, what is TJ Hawkins' middle name?
I'll be honest. I was not prepared for this aspect of the pod. I did no work on middle names. I did no prep. I have no notes up for middle names.
Hawkinson Jr., but like, did they just like move the J?
Did they just flip the J into the middle?
It's just like,
Thomas
Jr.
Hawkins.
I didn't know you could flex the J. I didn't know that was a thing. But maybe that is a thing. Where is his dad? Maybe I'm looking up his dad's name. I'm looking up
his dad's name is T.S. Hawkinson.
All right. His dad's name is Todd Hawkinson. So that doesn't help us.
Todd Hawkinson. See, now I'd have Todd Hawkinson top five.
Todd Hawkinson's a badass tight end name. Okay, anyways, well, if any of you know TJ Hawkinson's middle name, please tweet at us at Tampa Bay Trey at Benjamin Solak. All right, so Hawkinson over Ed Oliver. Let's talk about it. Your thoughts.
If you have Hawkinson graded over Oliver, whatever, live your dreams. If you think that a top 10 tight end is going to impact the game at the same degree as a top 10 defensive tackle does, that's where you kind of lose me. And to me, that's what it comes down to, is simply if Hawkinson is going to pay back on the 8th overall pick. And let's not forget, I had TJ Hawkinson graded top 10, but when we draft versus when we grade, it's a different philosophy, team building, roster management. If Hawkinson is going to pay back on a top 10 pick, he needs to become one of the best three tight ends in the league. Yeah. I mean, and so, and we're talking about, like, right now, if you look at the top tight ends, now that Gronk is retired, Gronk was a second round pick. Zach Ertz was a second round pick. George Kittle was a fifth round pick. Travis Kelce was a round pick, because I don't remember when he was selected. Travis Kelce was he was the fifth tight end drafted, in 63 overall. So another second round pick. So, like, right. It's not even like, you know, you need to go round one to get yourself an elite tight end. And so, like, you need Hawkinson to quickly, not like this year, but quickly, become at the level of, like, an Ertz or a Kittle and a Kelce in order to warrant this investment. So yeah, you just bet on a guy becoming top four at his position, which is hefty. And it's not like tight ends are getting big contracts, but they're not debilitatingly large contracts. So it's not even like you're saving too much money by having him on a rookie deal. So to me, it's, you know, I love the player. I don't love the fit, as a matter of fact. Like, I don't know much about Dynasty, or I'm not even a very good fantasy player. But, like, to me, Noah Fant ended up in a much better spot in terms of production with his receiving ability. Mm-hmm. Hawkinson, right. I don't envision getting a ton of downfield looks. I think it's going to be a lot of short stuff for Hawkinson. But you're really betting on this guy becoming the focal point of the offense. And I don't know.
Were you big on Jelani Tavai? Cause I want to talk about that a little bit too. Cause that pick really shocked me that high in the second round.
No, I wasn't, but he's a player where, like, it's not my cup of tea. It's not my flavor, but I get it. And for the Lions and Matt Patricia and the New England style defense, I totally get it. Like, we've got off-ball linebacker who's built like an edge, you know what I mean? And
sure,
really,
right.
Really great lateral explosiveness, and the ability to get sideline to sideline is very exciting. I don't think Tavai is nearly the, you know, smart, instinctive, good into contact player that he gets billed as sometimes. I think he plays, yes, with a lot of instinct, but that runs him into bad situations a lot. I don't see an elite tackler also the way that I think a lot of people see. But then again, it's tough because a lot of Tavai's film, he's at some degree of an injured shoulder. So, like, how good into contact and tackling is he? Because, like, he was beat up a lot over his last 2 years with the Rainbow Warriors. And so I get it. I'm not shocked to see it, especially in this linebacker class. But Tavai's was one of those players where, like, I'm just going to let somebody else bet on him. You know what I mean? Like, it's just I'm not right. comfortable enough with his evaluation.
As for the rest of this class, this is the first and only team that we're allowed to look at their draft and think, man, they could have had Amani Arawarie because they actually got
Amani Arawarie,
which I think is probably going to go down as absolutely all of our best values in the draft because, I mean, he was like CB3 for me and he ends up going in the fifth round at 146, which is like, somebody please explain to me, who did he kill? Is he wanted? Is there a warrant out for his arrest? What happened? Why did Amani Arawarie go fifth round? I get that you can look at him and think, you know, there's some things that he has to work on. You know, he's only a one-year starter. He didn't start till his senior year. That's a little concerning. Blah, blah, blah. All this kind of stuff. But, like what? Yeah. Fifth? Like, what? No, fifth round.
Like, the Chauncey one, like, there was an explanation. And Kelvin Harmon, we can go back to the film. Arawarie, it's like, well, boy, I don't know. Like, why is he here? Why is he here?
Yeah. Like, and because the other way, like, I think you're right. Chauncey, like, if you rub teams the wrong way attitude-wise, I get it. Like, you and I have had this conversation before where it's like, hey, you should probably still pick the guy. But we get it. Like, at least that I can understand what's going on. Kelvin Harmon, okay, I guess you think he's too slow, which not drafting him till the sixth round, you're again wrong. Amani, I don't get. And the Lions, I think Amani is in a perfect spot. I talked about this when he was drafted, being opposite of Slay, because Slay gets to play that man coverage, lockdown CB1 role, and Amani gets to really do more work with his eyes, have better anticipation, still has right. the size and the strength to be able to go man coverage if you want him to every now and then, but a cover three guy, you could still play an aggressive style of coverage on the boundaries. Like, I think this is a perfect spot. So weird that he lasted until this long, but I think it's a perfect spot for him. I really do.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, like, I am not totally sure how the Lions secondary is going to play itself out here, because even though, like, you and I can look at each other and be like, well, Arawarie, we had him graded as, you know, a starter. He can go out there and he can start. They only put a fifth round into him, and they have Tease Tabor, get a great second round pick, 2017, who's still there. They have, you know, Rashawn Melvin is also like a guy. Is Arawarie really going to get starting reps week one?
Yeah,
like,
know.
He has to go win that job because he wasn't drafted with a starter's capital. And then, you know, all right, so it's Quandre Diggs is your strong safety. Now, is Tracy Walker going to be the starter at free? Is Will Harris third round pick? Is he the free? How does Nickel go out? Is Miles Calabrese still part of this? I'm very interested to see how this secondary gets played out and who the starting five are, because I can't tell you that right now. I also can't tell you how the starting linebackers looks, because they have to get Jalen Reeves-Maven on the field more. Gerard Davis.
Oh, wait. Are you Jalen Reeves-Maven hive?
Boy, I do like the good players, Trevor. I've been trying to tell you.
Oh, hell yeah.
Good player,
hell
baby.
Yeah, brother.
Listen, as long as if he is healthy, he's great. The question of him is just whether or not he can stay on the field.
Man, I freaking love Jalen Reeves-Maven.
Yeah, he's a dog. And obviously,
boy, dude,
they still have Gerard Davis. Gatorade.
Gatorade.
What is Gerard Davis? He's a designated blitzer, if you ask me. And now it's Jelani Tavai who's in there. So, like, they have a lot to figure out on the back seven. The reason I kind of said, you know, laugh at the Lions is just simply, to me, like, they drafted Hockenson, and then Tavai is your developmental guy. And then they drafted a backup in Will Harris, a backup in Austin Bryant, a backup in Travis Fulgham, a backup in Ty Johnson. Like, they just drafted so many players who, to me, I'm like, all right, the ceiling for this guy is, like, 20 snaps a game.
The ceiling
and
is
they
the floor.
Just poured it into the defense.
The floor
and
is
got
the roof.
One starter. The floor is the roof. Exactly.
Oh, man. Never forget that Jordan that Jordan Scarlett put Jalen Reeves-Maven on his ass when they played at Tennessee a couple of years ago.
You remember the only good Jordan Scarlett play. That's how you know you're a true fan.
We're going to fight. Okay, so that's it. That's it for this episode because Ben and I are literally going to throw hands if we keep going. We've got the NFC South tomorrow. Giving it away. We got the Buccaneers, the Panthers, the Saints, and the Falcons. We're going to run down all of those draft classes. So until then, you keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.